You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for July 1st, 2022. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Cornfield Resistance, where our governor isn't a low-life racist lunatic trying to drag our state back to the 13th century. It's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Hey, Driftglass.
Blue Gal.
Tough week.
Tough week.
So we need to talk about Roe v. Wade and the end of Roe v. Wade and this utterly corrupt and illegitimate Supreme Court that has overturned Roe v. Wade.
Yep.
We got a letter on this topic, and I just thought it was such a good letter that I thought I'd start our conversation with it. Mm-hmm. This is from Peggy. And Peggy wrote to us and said, "I'm sure you will be talking about Roe during the podcast. I hope I'm not too late to add my bit. Here in Kansas," and if those of you that are following the story know, Kansas is definitely on the edge of this conversation. "Here in Kansas, the state Supreme Court ruled that the right to abortion is protected under the state constitution. Mm-hmm. The first vote in the nation after Roe was overturned will be here on August 2nd, asking that the constitution be amended to allow the regulation of abortion." Mm-hmm. "They put it on the August primary ballot, hoping for a low turnout, nobody notices it event. Then Roe was overturned."
Yeah.
"I went to the county Democratic office on that day, and the office was so crowded, I had to wait in line to get my vote no sign. I went back yesterday to get more, and they're out. Women here are angry and fired up. But the churches are passing out vote yes signs and proselytizing. I cannot tell you how ashamed I am to be an American Christian this week."
Mm-hmm.
That's me talking, by the way.
Yes, loud and clear.
Her, yeah. Back to her letter. Churches can do that since it's an issue rather than a candidate here in Kansas. Missouri has a trigger law. This morning, the St. Luke's Health System. I mean, just absorb that for a minute. Mm-hmm. The St. Luke's Health System announced the despicable policy that they would no longer provide Plan B to rape victims at their Missouri side facilities.
Missouri side.
Right. Missouri mm-hmm. side, and as opposed to Illinois side.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and Kansas side. They will still be provided at the Kansas side facilities. "They reversed this decision this afternoon after a well-deserved outcry. My Missouri side daughter had already discussed this. She already avoids the Catholic hospital and will now avoid Missouri side secular hospitals with any GYN appearing problems. These loonies want to prevent women in Missouri from flooding into Illinois and Kansas for abortion. The problem is the St. Louis Planned Parenthood is in an Illinois suburb." Yes, it is. There's the East St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
The city of East St. Louis is in Illinois,
mm-hmm.
everybody. That's what it's called. It's called East St. Louis, but it is within the state of Illinois. "And the Kansas City office of Planned Parenthood is in a Kansas side suburb. The Kansas City, Missouri metro area is on both sides of the state line, and thousands of Missourians flood to the other side of the state line every day for work. And as I pointed out to her, to Peggy, who wrote us this letter, we experienced this when Junior Dude was going to school in the Quad Cities."
That's right.
"Which is an area of Illinois on the Mississippi River, where two cities are on the Iowa side and two cities are on the Illinois side. And everything Quad Cities is its own geographic area that runs by its own rules. So on the Iowa side of the river, the medical facilities take Illinois Medicaid. They take Illinois insurance and vice versa for the Illinois side with Iowa stuff, because there's just no way with that concentration of people who are working on both sides of the river to not do it that way, that you have to do business that way."
Mm-hmm.
How are they going to regulate this, says Peggy. Set up pregnancy test stations at the state line exit of I-435, like they have way stations on the turnpike? Otherwise, women might be getting lunch hour abortions. My daughter lives a couple of miles on the Missouri side of the state line, while I live a couple miles on the Kansas side. She traveled to Kansas every day for work for years, and her husband still does. My representative is the wonderful Charisse Davis, the first gay Native American woman in Congress. She had a fundraiser with a drag show. She is not afraid. She's wonderful in a district where being a Democrat used to feel like a fantasy. She does solid constituent and veteran outreach, just as her Republican predecessor never did. I'd be interested to hear what you think of Rodney Davis's defeat by the Nazi lady. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well. We can talk about that. Is there a Democrat running? I love you guys, Peggy. This is the thing. There are parts of the country where a state can get up in women's hoo-ha and try to regulate things. But as we have noted this week, there are women in Texas who have been going to Mexico for abortions for years because it's just easier. You're not going to be able to control interstate commerce in that way. It's just not possible. And we've got to fight. I mean, this is the thing. We've just got to continue to fight. As I started off this podcast, this Supreme Court is corrupt and illegitimate.
Absolutely.
And what they've done will not stand. I'm willing to spend the rest of my life fighting this.
Yeah, well. You and I will probably have to.
We probably will have to, yeah.
And it's not yet like it was in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
There are still 22 states. I believe there's a consortium of 22 states' attorneys general who are like, fuck no. We're going to hang on to
and expand. We're not going to prosecute anybody, right?
No. Well, I mean, these are states where it's legal.
Yeah, right.
And this is Illinois and New York and California and so forth. They're just, no. This is not going to happen. We're not going to tolerate this in our states. We're going to be very welcoming and open. There's a lot of anger out there at a lot of people. And but face it, here's the thing. It is a lot easier when your electoral pool is 9 people to rig it to win by 1 or 2 votes than it is to win the Senate or the House. Or the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And those 3 institutions, Senate, House, and White House, are all designed to check and balance each other.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to get anything done, if you're a Republican, what you want to do is destroy the government. That's your goal.
Yeah.
Your goal is to destroy the Constitution, dismantle the administrative state, destroy government, keep pouring sand into the engine every time you get a chance until everyone's convinced government sucks and can't do anything. And then say, see, government sucks, don't elect us and we'll take this burden off your shoulders and institute a nice Christian theocracy.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're a Democrat, you're always trying to fix shit. You're always trying to fix shit other people broke and are breaking and are setting fire to, or you're trying to get something done that has never been done before, like the Affordable Care Act. You're actually trying to do things. But to do that in our current political environment, I know this is hard for people who want unicorns and ponies to solve all of their problems. You cannot get shit done without control of the White House, control of the House, and an unfilibusterable majority in the Senate. That either means you have 52 Democrats, because remember, there's only 48 Democrats and 2 independents on our side of the fence now.
One of them broke their hip today.
Right.
So,
you either have to have that and a willingness on the part of everyone involved to carve up the filibuster to make room for everything you want. Mm-hmm. Which is a very heavy lift for people who have been in that institution for 20 years and still have this vestigial hope that maybe we can get back to normal order. We can't.
Well, they're calcified.
Exactly.
I'm sorry. I don't buy this hope that they'll be back to normal order. They're millionaires and billionaires. They're privileged as fuck. They have staff waiting on them hand and foot all day long.
That's true.
As Lawrence said, 50% of them are entirely dependent on staff to do their jobs.
Absolutely.
Because they're just too old.
So it is unrealistic to expect that barring a personal and immediate threat to their families on the subject at hand, that you're going to get a number of Democrats willing to break the filibuster apart in any meaningful way. Maybe a talking filibuster.
Well, you know, yeah. And you and I have mentioned that before.
Sure.
The idea that you have to talk on the topic of the bill at hand, and you have to have your caucus sitting there watching you do it.
Right.
The majority of your caucus has to sit there and break out the cots and take turns and be there and witness it, so that it's not just Rand Paul every time a bill comes up saying, I'm going to filibuster it.
And I know that everyone listening to this podcast knows this, mm-hmm. but the number of people I have run into in the last few days who are absolutely certain that all Democrats have to do is wait them out. After 24 hours, they're going to get tired and sit down, and then you can just overcome the filibuster. And it's like, dude, are you 12? What, have you been paying any attention? No, that is not how it works at all anymore. So
Mitch McConnell set it up so that all he has to do is lift his little finger.
Right.
And it's a cloture vote, and there is no talking filibuster. It's just, I don't want to vote on it. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't get brought to the floor. And that is an abuse of the filibuster. Sure. He knows it.
He counts on it. His entire party depends on grossly abusing the authority they have
right.
to get more authority. Or you get what no Democrat other than Franklin Roosevelt and LBJ had for brief windows, which is a filibuster-proof majority right. of Democrats willing to go along with you. Not the Joe Lieberman majority, who's
right.
willing to stab you in the back and hold you hostage to what he wants.
Right.
And those things are theoretically possible, but that's it. There isn't another way forward.
That's why we saw John Fetterman win in Pennsylvania.
Exactly.
It's clear
right.
that in Democratic primaries, Democrats want someone who's going to raise their hand and say, I will be that 51st, 52nd vote to undo the filibuster and break this logjam. Well, and if you're not willing to be that kind of fighter, it's time for you to be your office to be flooded with letters and calls.
Absolutely.
And AOC has a Twitter stream up, a thread up, instructing you and giving you a list of senators, a list of Democratic senators and where they stand on modifying the filibuster, and instructions on how to call their office, instructions on how to send them a postcard, and tell them, and I'm going to be writing postcards to Tammy Duckworth and Dick Durbin this weekend, that we're not going to tolerate half measures.
I just want to say, this is, if all of this seems like an insane tangle of mm-hmm. weird hoops to have to go through, mm-hmm. it's about 80% because that's the way the framers designed it.
17th century.
They did not want anybody to have all the power. So yeah. we're going to give the president zero power, but lots of power. And the House controls the purse strings. And the Senate controls the legislation. And stuff has to go through here and there. There is no filibuster in the Constitution. That is something that was just fucking made up by mm-hmm. accident. But it's mm-hmm. become part of their rich and horrible tradition. So you have three
institutions. And it was presumed that if you made it to the Supreme Court, you had such judicial honor and restraint yeah. that you would not need any checks and balances.
And that's the problem.
And that's the problem.
Supreme Court, there's no check on the Supreme Court other than the fact that they don't have an army. You know, they enforce their laws.
And I guess you can impeach them. I guess if you had 60 radical Democrats what the press would call radical Democrats in the Senate, you could impeach
sure.
one or two of them.
But it's easier to seize control of six seats on the Supreme Court than yep. hold the White House, the Senate, and the House for as long as it would have taken to do all the horrible things Republicans want to do.
Especially if you were willing and able to trick enough of them earlier into allowing unlimited dark money to flood the system.
Yes, yes. And so
started with Citizens United.
And so in one term, in one term, the Trump Supreme Court has done more for the right than has been done for them ever.
Yeah.
They have gotten more of what they asked for.
In two weeks. Yeah.
And this is why the base loves them. Mm-hmm. This is, you delivered. You found the chink in the armor. You found mm-hmm. the undemocratic way to force our theocratic lunacy onto the rest of the country with no stopping us. This is, and you know who warned us about this? Hillary Rodham Clinton, mm-hmm. clear as a fucking bell. She said it over and over again. Trump means he could appoint up to 4 Republican judges on the Supreme Court, and this is why that should terrify you. This is not new. This is not a new piece of information. This is something that people have been saying for a very long time. And there's a whole bunch of progressives out there who thought the court didn't fucking matter.
So write to your senators. If you have Democratic senators, go and look at AOC's Twitter thread. Write to them and tell them this must end. This filibuster stuff must end, and get their commitment to do it. And they are good. Republicans are good at flooding the system.
They are.
And keeping their people in line and primarying them and calling them Republicans in name only.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they're also, some of them are good at threatening violence. I don't recommend that.
Nope.
But I do think you need to write a letter to them and let their staff know, because the staff runs things in so many of these offices. Mm-hmm. Make their staff's jobs annoying
mm-hmm.
with phone calls and letters about the filibuster, that this is the issue. This is what is stopping women from having equal rights in the United States of America and bodily autonomy.
Well, and the Supreme Court stripping half of this country, more than half of this country, of a basic constitutional right, this radical, illegitimate court stripping them, yeah. should have been the biggest news story of our generation this summer, this year, et cetera. But it had to go in side by side with the January 6th hearings.
Mm-hmm. And Cassidy Hutchison's testimony, which was so disturbing because of the violence therein. I mean, some of it, you know, people made jokes about throwing a plate against the wall. The president throwing a plate, so-called president. The so-called president throwing a plate against the wall and getting ketchup on the wall of the White House dining room. And, you know, the guy who squirted, lock him up in ketchup on the sidewalk. But that kind of workplace violence is something that a lot of women experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it can be very triggering for people. And Hillary Clinton tweeted within the past few days, he wanted an armed coup and he got it.
He did.
He knew they had weapons and he didn't care.
Oh, he wanted them to have weapons.
And he didn't care about his own, he wasn't worried about his own personal safety. He wanted the mags, the metal detectors, removed. And he said, they're not going to hurt me. Well, who are they going to hurt? And we know who they're going to hurt. They're going to hurt Nancy Pelosi, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and Mike Pence.
Yep.
Mike Pence, if necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a bombshell. And then the other bombshell to me, and I don't know how you felt about it, Driftglass, but the other utter bombshell that I'm still grappling with is Mike Flynn saying the fifth.
Taking the
to,
fifth.
Do you believe in the peaceful transfer of power?
Fifth. Yeah. By the way, Oliver Platt is doing a great job pretending to be his lawyer. That's great. just want to get that out there. He's doing bang up. He's on the bear for a minute, and now I know what he's doing the rest of his time. Because if you look at his lawyer, holy shit, that's Oliver Platt. I swear to God.
Oh, wow. Just being sitting there very grumpy going, we have to talk about this question for 5 minutes.
Yeah. And then he comes back and says, what was the question again? Oh, yeah.
Fifth.
And this is a guy who the military could strip of his pension tomorrow.
This is a fucking traitor is what it is.
Yeah.
A traitor to democracy.
And this is a traitor that Barack Obama warned Donald Trump not to hire. And Donald Trump hired him because Barack said no. So Trump says yes.
Yeah.
That was the entire policy of the Obama administration. Understanding the base wants me to fuck this guy over because they hate him. They hate the black guy. So anything he did, I'm going to undo. And they're going to love me for it, which turned out to be true. The biggest bombshell for me, I mean, there were a whole bunch of them going off. Grabbing a steering wheel, did he lunge? Did he grab? Did he brush up against it? Did his little tiny hands? I don't care. It was shocking, but it wasn't surprising.
Mm-hmm.
It was Donald Trump being a belligerent asshole who is now the president, which is why he said, I'm the fucking president. Now drive me to the riot, basically. Because he didn't want to lead it. He wanted to stand behind it, urge them to go in and murder people, and then have him carried in on their shoulders.
Crown king, right. Yeah. Crown king in
that
the
was his
halls
dream.
Of Congress. Yeah.
And his dream was this close to happening. So when his driver took him away from it, he lost his shit.
Yeah.
As of course he did, because that's the kind of petulant, tyrannical lunatic Trump mad has king. Always been.
Yep, the mad king.
But the and the fact that he was cool with them chanting "Hang Mike Pence" doesn't surprise me.
No,
because you know Pence, the crowd's on my side, and he deserves it. But really, the legitimate fear that Mike Pence apparently had that his security detail, who were dog loyal to Trump, mm-hmm. if he got in the car, would drive him away to Alaska mm-hmm. or some other place where he couldn't get back in the building. And then you could have Chuck Grassley, 812-year-old Chuck Grassley, dodder up to the front and do Trump's bidding. And these were all like contingency plan A, B, C, D, E, F. And F was, I would imagine, get Pence out of the building. If you can't kill mm-hmm. him, get him away, far away. Have your loyal, you know, palace guard spirit right. him away someplace so that we can do the shit we want to do. And Mike Pence apparently having the presence of mind to say, I'm not getting in the car.
Right.
Because he'd seen 7 days in May.
Right.
He knew
right.
exactly what was going to happen to him if he got in the car with Trump loyalists.
Well, and he trusted his own personal Secret Service agent to say, yep. I trust you, but I'm not getting in the car with these guys. I have a job to do. And that's right. I know they will claim, oh, it's not safe to go back there. And then that vote would never have happened.
Right. What I would like to know is Cassidy Hutchinson going to vote for Trump again if he runs again?
Oh, yeah. That's a good question.
Right down the line, these noble men and women who in the breach stood up and said, no, I will not go that this far and no further, were all asked, and would you vote for Trump again? Oh, yeah, I'd vote for him again. And, you know, she's 25, 26 years old, and mm-hmm. she is deeply embedded in the White House. And I'm fascinated by what happened to get this clearly competent, smart, articulate young lady to be a Trump true believer who was with him all the way up to the armed murder plot against Mike Pence. And then it's like, oh, that's no, that's too much. That makes me nervous now. And what malfunction is going on with people like that, that lets them sort of be swept along by the majesty of it and the power of it and the promotion. Maybe that's just it. You know, you're on a power trip. You go from being,
it's a glamorous job for a 25-year-old girl yeah, to be dressed up every day. In the center of power.
Yep.
Doing very important work with very important men.
Yeah.
It's intoxicating. And regardless of what her personal relationships were with their, I've heard rumors and I don't even want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. It's a glamorous job. She's at the top of her game at 25 doing secretarial work, basically. In an office where, you know, the world is changing and you're making it happen every day. Mm-hmm. The other bombshell to me was the mental state of her boss.
Yes. Checked out.
Yeah. Just checked out.
Yeah.
Chief of staff just checked out looking at his phone. No, he doesn't want to do anything.
Yeah.
So I'm going to sit here and watch the world burn.
I'm sitting here playing Treason with Friends with Jim Jordan right. on the phone.
Right. Right.
And they're chanting "Murder Mike Pence, Hang Mike Pence," right? And he shakes his head, like, you know,
he doesn't care.
Doesn't care.
He doesn't want to do anything. He thinks Mike deserves it, and he's, you know, we don't have.
Well, and this is when Trump's back in the White House, so Trump is sitting in his office, sulking and pouting that he wasn't driven to the riot so he could take place with it personally.
Yeah.
And now he's in his "fuck you, kill them all" mode, and it really is just. It's not, again, it's shocking, but not surprising. It's the, someone asked me about what did I think when I heard that all of this went down. It's like, I'm not surprised by any of it.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised by any of it because these people have always been this way. And the craven Nazi enabling GOP infrastructure mm-hmm. has been in place for 30 years.
Yeah.
What the individual details are the stuff that's striking. You know, good storytelling has good details. And this had great details of where I was, ketchup who was there.
And steering wheels and yeah. ketchup. And
yeah. all the stuff that sticks ketchup. In your memory. And then, of course, you have the Fox News people, you know, sprinting in circles, trying to find a way to distract. And Hunter Biden's laptop and the border.
Well, and don't forget the character assassination of Cassidy Hutchinson. Sure. We have to make this woman, because it's a woman, first of all, that's mm-hmm. an opportunity to destroy her, and that she's telling the truth about us. And so we're going to do a character assassination. And also we're going to hang on details. Like, you can't prove he grabbed the steering wheel.
Right.
And then, you couldn't grab the steering wheel in the Beast. Well, it turns out he wasn't in the Beast. He wasn't in that limo. He was in an SUV. So we saw that on the video.
Right.
And it just, just like you say, the propaganda is failing at this point because the committee's propaganda, the thing is, propaganda can be true and propaganda can be used for good.
Right.
And the committee clearly understands that. They understand that this has to be packaged for television. I think we have to take a minute and talk about why was this particular hearing a surprise hearing?
Yes.
During a week when Washington, D.C. is on vacation.
Yes, yes.
And, there's nothing to cover this week.
Well,
Well, there's Roe to cover. And that also is another lesson for us. I said this last week that, the court was going to be on a plane to Dubai while Roe is being torn down. They picked a day, a Friday, when Congress was leaving town for 2 weeks to run for their primaries, if they have them coming up, to meet with their constituents, to do constituent services and vacation. A lot of them, it's just vacation. And so this idea of, Democrats are doing nothing. Democrats, they on purpose timed it where anyone opposed to this has no ability to respond as an institution.
Right.
The House isn't there to respond as an institution, as a separate branch of government. So, that was on purpose, folks. So here on purpose comes, we're going to have a surprise hearing.
Yep.
And to find out at the end of the hearing that there was all kinds of witness intimidation and witness
tampering
going on.
Uh-huh.
Is not surprising given the mob behavior of this president from day one.
Mm-hmm.
But calling them out on it and having examples of it at the end of this hearing, and we've said this many times, Liz Cheney is willing to ride the slide of blood down to hell with Donald Trump.
Uh-huh.
She's given up her Senate seat for it.
Yes. Yes.
Or her House seat. Her House seat.
I have a feeling, there's always the hope that from the ashes of the GOP that I burned down, they will, because that was the Never Trumpers' hope. It was, Donald Trump will get crushed by Hillary Clinton because he's obviously insane. And then we can rush in and take over the infrastructure of the party as the We Told You So party.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then that didn't work.
Right.
The Republican Party is not going to be reformed anytime soon, because what you saw in the attacks on the automated robotic attacks on Cassidy Hutchinson specifically, is an ancient weapon that all of the Never Trumpers built, which is do not listen to anything the liberal media tells you. Attack anyone who attacks us. Anyone who's not of us. It's like Landru from Star Trek. You're not of the body. And the minute you leave the body, you are the enemy and you need to go down. And that's something that is built into the GOP DNA for 40, 50 years. And so to see it happen is not a surprise, because that's how they operate. And that's why I get, bitterly amused when I see Never Trumpers trying to talk sense into their former colleagues. Can't you see how wrong this is? Like, dude, you trained them to ignore you. You trained them to ignore people exactly like you. Like we said before on a previous podcast, look, I'm a dirty liberal. They don't listen to me at all and they hate me, but they don't hate me, the heat of a thousand suns. They hate you because you're an apostate. Mm-hmm. You left the body. You're the worst criminal of all. And so the idea that someone's going to, wake up to all of this, they're going to wake up to the fact that Trump is a scumbag and a traitor and a monster, and they're going to vote for him again. Because remember, the ultimate enemy is the liberals, is the left.
Yes.
And therefore, anything anyone does, including hanging Mike Pence, is acceptable as long as the goal was to put a Republican back in the White House.
Did you vote for J.B. Pritzker for Governor Driftglass?
I consulted the 538 polls, which I literally did this morning, because they have J.B. Pritzker at 100 to 1 odds.
Uh-huh.
Literally, Darren Bailey has a 1% chance of winning that election. And
well, you know, they were the ones who were responsible for Donald Trump winning, as far as I'm concerned. So
J.B. Pritzker is definitely going to lose. I mean,
well, I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so. But we had a primary.
We did.
There were 18 in the, this is the Democratic ballot. That's all we're looking at. We're not looking at any Republicans. Mm-hmm. 18 offices to vote for. And I believe it was 4 of them had no candidate. So just a Republican is running for those local seats, mm-hmm. which is a shame.
Yep.
And 8 of them were unopposed.
Right.
Now, there was some rando who I'd never heard of running against J.B. Pritzker in the Democratic primary for governor.
Yeah.
Who I think probably got 2%.
Yeah, that's about right.
Senator Tammy Duckworth was running unopposed as a Democrat for U.S. Senate. So, yes, I'm willing to bet the farm that Tammy Duckworth is going to retain her Senate seat. Yeah, there were 8 Democrats with no opposition. So incumbent Democrats receiving support for within their party to go ahead and keep running. We voted. We got donuts and talked to people. And it was a democratically run election. And for that, I am grateful.
It was 10 minutes.
Calling small blessings here. Gratitude. 10
minutes. It took us 10 minutes, all told. Mm-hmm. It was well attended, but not crowded. We thanked all the election workers individually on the way out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was easy. Yeah. Voting's easy. In our precinct, voting is easy. And so it was a primary election, and every election counts. And we went and we got our stickers, and I walked around smugly shoving my chest into people's face all day. Did you vote? Did you vote?
Yeah.
And the results were pretty much as expected. Although there's a much longer story that we'll get into in local politics.
Oh, yeah.
That's a fascinating parable, shall we say. But that's for later.
That's for later. We want to just talk for a minute more about J.B. Pritzker because of what it says about the Democratic Party.
Yes. Now, our humble little state out here in the middle America has made it into the national media. Well, Charlie Pierce, who's national media, he writes for Esquire, and he wrote a whole thing about our governor and the happy fun time that he's going to have beating the crap out of Darren Bailey. The story is entitled J.B. Pritzker's Grasp of Politics 101 Shouldn't Feel Like a Breath of Fresh Air, but here we are. Possibly other Democrats should be taking notes. And Mr. Pierce, friend of the blog, friend of the podcast, writes, Bailey is Pritzker's Republican opponent in the upcoming a bone-deep Trumpian downstate bite in the ass who beat 5 other bites in the ass by conjuring up the same kind of dark magic that put his idol in the White House in 2016. During the pandemic, Bailey got on the Wingnut radar by suing Pritzker's administration over lockdown orders and by refusing to wear a mask on the floor of the state Senate. Subsequently, Bailey has refused to acknowledge Joe Biden's 2020 victory and has made the customary meal out of Chicago that downstate bites in the ass regularly make. Bailey referred to the state's largest and most internationally renowned city, and where I lived for 25 years, as a hellhole, and supported a legislative move that Chicago be designated its own state, although he dropped that notion when he began his campaign for governor. Pritzker reminded him of that campaign on Tuesday night. In fact, Bailey is so far off the diving board that the state's Democrats put their thumbs on the scale of the GOP primary and helped him to the nomination. This has given some people the vapors. My God, look what happened in 2016. But those people forget that the strategy of finagling your preferred opponent through the process works as often as it does not. It worked for Senator Claire McCaskill against Todd Akin, and sure as hell worked for the Nixon people in 1972. And I would just add to this that your friend and mine, Blue Gal, Matthew Dowd, went on MSNBC just this week that was brought to my attention. He was huffing and puffing and getting very upset that Democrats were spending millions of dollars to mess around with Republican primaries when what Democrats should be doing, I kid you not, Democrats should be doing is helping constitutional Republicans get elected. That's our job. Because the Republican Party is all fucked up, you know. And it's our job as Democrats to fix the Republican Party by getting more Republicans who Matthew Dowd approves of, elected into the Republican universe.
Fuck you, Matthew
and
Dowd.
There was no one on the set at the time to say, fuck you, Matthew Dowd, and haul out a wallet full of receipts and slap him around with it. Because the job of MSNBC is to rehabilitate clowns like Matthew Dowd.
That's
what's happening in our state. Our governor knows how politics works.
Well, and he won the Don't Sugarcoat It award this week with his acceptance speech of the nomination, in which he said, you know, we are willing to work across the aisle on common sense solutions to things, but we've been, he didn't say pulled back a bloody stump. He used the Lucy in the football metaphor often enough to realize that our obligation to our children is to win.
Yeah.
Is to get elected so that we can make progress in this state and not have, and he didn't say this, but not have to deal with the bullshit.
Right.
Of Republican mask wars and calling Chicago a shithole and on and on and all these culture war bullshit that Darren Bailey absolutely is.
That's his whole thing. He doesn't have any policies other than taxes are too high and Chicago is a hellhole. The whole idea of Pritzker, and this is what Charlie Pierce means by politics 101. Accomplish stuff, brag about the stuff you've accomplished, and hang Trump around the neck of your opponent. Boom. Right. Just keep doing that. And we have a governor who does that every day on Twitter and in person and in press releases.
And he said, and Pritzker said, anyone who looks for the endorsement of the misogynistic, anti-democratic asshole, he didn't say asshole, but it was implied. Donald Trump. Anyone who seeks the endorsement of that person has no business asking for the highest office in the state, period.
Yeah.
Didn't sugarcoat it.
No.
At all. So the other thing on topic with Roe v. Wade, I want to come back to that for a minute.
Of course.
Because it's very upsetting. And losing bodily autonomy nationwide is something that, regardless of whether you live in a state like Illinois where it's enshrined in law, that that is not a comfort when you realize just how much power these illegitimate, corrupt judges have over our lives. And Roe was the showpiece for the right-wing evangelicals that, this is the brass ring that they've wanted for 40 years. Mm-hmm. And the Supreme Court delivered for them. But the reason they were put on the court was deregulation and pollution.
Yeah. Yep.
And their sponsors got what they wanted this week with this EPA decision of,
yes, they did.
Buy your own clean air because we're out. But Professor Darren Hutchison on Twitter pointed out what Democrats have done to protect Roe v. Wade. And I think it's important to amplify that just from the standpoint of recognizing the, and this is a way I put it this week, and I know I told you this already, Driftglass, that the analogy that, you know, the Republican Party is the drunk dad who breaks the television set and walks out never to be seen again.
Yes.
And mom is left with the three kids, and the kids are mad at mom because she's there and there's no TV.
That's right. And they want
to
know.
And I want to be careful not to associate having a television set with bodily autonomy. They are not the same thing.
Nope.
But the mom that stays behind, the responsible parent, is the Democratic Party that doesn't have the resources to do what needs to be done to protect the bodily autonomy of women across the country because the Republicans have cheated and used gerrymandering and the Electoral College to get their way and have no responsibility. And you can't yell at them because they're gone. The Republican Party is gone as a governing participant in government.
You can yell at them all you want. But, I mean, you know, Andrew Sullivan went on the Bill Maher show to blame both sides for
that. Yeah, right.
And this is a great opportunity for Democrats to get out there and create coalitions and, and you know, get back what we just lost. Like, fuck you. And my only satisfaction with that is in 3 years when the Supreme Court annuls his marriage – because I can say, hey, Andrew, just get out there and build coalitions to get your rights
back. Yeah.
I'm not responsible for your rights. So you go out and do that shit. And by the way, and regarding this, things that Democrats have already done, there is an enormous amount of people working very hard over the last 30 years to protect women's rights to their own bodies in states where it's clear they were coming for all this time. People who run clinics, people who do escorts, people who arrange travel, all those people. Those people are not Republicans. I can fucking guarantee you that.
That's right. And just to carry that analogy further, there you go with the neighbors who are the Andrew Sullivan saying, well, you know, mom, with your three kids and broken TV, go out there and build a coalition to get your family back.
Or maybe if you were a better wife. Maybe if you were a better wife.
And that's the in-laws, isn't it? That's Manchin and Sinema. You know, the institution of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be glad to help you support your kids, but this is my brother we're talking about and the institution of marriage. No, your brother is an asshole who broke the television, was violent, and stormed out and never to be participating in the marriage again. He left. He left me with nothing. And it's like, oh, well, the institution of marriage. I really have to support the institution, so I'm not going to help you and the kids out. Because that's my brother. And that's Manchin and Sinema. Then they're talking about the institution and the enshrined tradition of the filibuster. When bodily autonomy has been taken away from 55 million women. And all the talk about you supporting them, you don't. Democrats in the House have passed over 60 pro-abortion rights bills since 2021.
Yep, they sure have.
All of them blocked in the Senate by Republicans. Every single one of them blocked in the Senate by Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have state by state what Democrats have done. In New York, since the leaked opinion, not since Roe was taken down, but since the opinion was leaked, New York has passed six more bills ensuring the rights of women in New York to their fundamental right of bodily autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
In New Jersey, they codified abortion rights in January because the Democratic majority could do that. In Colorado, earlier this year, abortion was made a fundamental right passed by Democrats. In California, where they already have the strongest abortion protection in the nation, they passed a bill that immunizes people who assist out-of-state abortion seekers. Also, the Democratic legislature introduced a constitutional amendment to the state constitution of California protecting abortion rights. In Oregon, they don't have any new legislation because in 2017, Oregon Democrats saw the writing on the wall and did a citizen vote to enshrine abortion rights and codified it in 2017. In Washington State, in 1991, Washington State Democrats launched a voter initiative to codify abortion rights. Washington advocates feared the overturning of Roe v. Wade in 1991, so they prepared for it and did a voter initiative to codify abortion rights in the state. Democrats did that. Then we have Democrats in California, Oregon, and Washington entering into an agreement to strengthen and protect access to abortion, especially for people who will inevitably travel to those states for abortion services. This is what Democrats have done.
And
Nevada, another Democratic state, already has abortion rights codified. It follows the Roe standard in their laws. New Mexico. The past few years, the Democratic legislature and the Democratic governor have lifted most restrictions regarding abortion from state law. Abortion advocates rate New Mexico as a safe and legal state. There's more to be done, but they rate it as a safe and legal state. Maryland, a Democratic state, codified abortion rights 30 years ago by voter initiative. Connecticut codified abortion rights 30 years ago. This year, the Connecticut legislature, run by Democrats, passed a law protecting people traveling to Connecticut to receive an abortion and allows nurses, midwives, and physician assistants to provide abortion in the first 12 weeks of pregnancy. Massachusetts already had broad abortion rights, including public funding. The Republican governor in this blue state, and that is a tradition, don't get me started. Republican governors, they're all very socially liberal, and they're put in there as a check on the Democratic legislature so that taxes don't go up. But they never elect an anti-choice Republican to that office.
Exactly right.
So the Republican governor of Massachusetts, quote unquote Republican, issued an executive order protecting abortion clinics and patients. That's what the Republican, quote unquote, governor of Massachusetts did. Also, Senator Elizabeth Warren immediately did a fundraiser when Roe was overturned for Kansas. So she is raising money for abortion services in Kansas and the fight for Kansas. You know, that's not her playground, but she's there fighting.
Yeah.
Vermont codified abortion as a fundamental right in 2019. Rhode Island Democrats codified Roe in 2019. District of Columbia, deep blue District of Columbia, has protected abortion rights. Virginia, status of abortion is up in the air. The state has liberal abortion laws because they had a Democratic governor, but now they have a Republican governor. And he has indicated he wants to impose restrictions limiting abortion to 15 weeks. African-American women in the state legislature of Virginia are not having it. And then you have Illinois. And yeah. Illinois, immediately, the governor, Governor Pritzker, called for a special session of the legislature to further codify the rights of Illinois women to bodily autonomy and also to protect women coming into Illinois and their bodily autonomy. So that's 19 instances of Democrats doing something.
Well, I just want to add that this was a great list. Thank you for doing all that homework.
I didn't do it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Professor Hutchinson did it.
Professor Hutchinson on Twitter did it. Yes.
It doesn't include the 100 or so Republican bills that attack abortion, attack women's rights that Democrats blocked last year.
Right.
Because they don't sleep. Right. Republicans are coming for all of your rights, and they're going to keep coming because there's no reasoning with them. They're jaws. All they do is eat and attack. That's all they do. And they're coming for you. And Democrats, but the crime that doesn't happen, the dog doesn't bark, doesn't get reported. But they made a steady, relentless barrage attack on your rights last year. And every one of them was blocked by the Democrats.
We're going to talk about Mary Miller for a minute.
Please. Please do.
She's a Nazi. And she won her primary and she beat Rodney Davis.
She did. She did.
She had Trump rally in, you know, white bodies. And yeah.
In Quincy, Illinois. I wrote a whole post about Quincy, Illinois. Quincy has an ad campaign called Move to Quincy. We'll pay you $5,000 to move to Quincy. And
because all the young people are leaving. I wonder why.
I wonder. Well, and their commercials, there are an awful lot of white people in their commercials, like almost exclusively white people. And then you look it up. Oh, it's a bright red city. It's the county seat of Adams County, which is a bright red Trump. They went for Trump like 3-1, 4-1.
Isn't that where Darren Bailey's from?
I think it might be. Yeah. I'm not sure. No, I think he's from upstate. I think he's further upstate. But Adams is, like I said, it's a deep red state. The last big thing they had there was the Trump rally.
Yeah.
You know, so no, don't go to Quincy, Illinois. Quincy, Illinois is a shithole. I wouldn't stop in Quincy for McDonald's fries if you paid me. If you pay me $5,000, I'd do it. Then I'd leave with my fries. But the reason that this is interesting to me is that I did want to talk a little bit about Tim Miller's book, not a book review, but talk about the strategy that made this Republican Party possible. And first, I need to read you a sample of authentic Trump country gibberish from a prominent local citizen who was commenting on this week's primaries.
And we apologize for including this in our show.
We do. I would like to apologize in advance to everyone for including this in our show. Cover your children's ears. But this is how we know who these people are. They live next to us. We know who they are. They talk this way. They're not shy about it. Quote, I am encouraged to see Darren Bailey and Mary Miller win the primaries. 4 exclamation points. I'm usually very active, all caps, in our elections. But our lives, as a lot of you know, have changed dramatically because these people didn't want to go along with COVID and got into some trouble, et cetera, et cetera. I'm seeing prayers of God's people being answered, exclamation points. We have all cried to God for our country, exclamation points. Thank you, capital Jesus, for answering our prayers. We need to not shrink back in our prayers, but increase our prayers to turn our country back to God, exclamation points. Just keep getting longer and longer.
15 million exclamation points in here. Yeah.
I truly believe the prayers of the righteous availed much. It's time to, all caps, keep standing in the gap. Keep God in front of our minds. Be wise and not fall for Biden's cabinet's sneaky moves to try and win in 2024. She's a lunatic. She's a right-wing lunatic. She's also a prominent member of our community, and she believes this stuff, and lots of people here do. Now, let's quickly pivot to Tim Miller's new book, in which he explains the very simple organizing strategy of the Steve Bannon Breitbart crew, and it was to look unflinchingly at what actually motivates the Republican base, and to listen very carefully to the wild conspiracies and unvarnished racism, anti-Semitism, and homophobia of the lunatics in their comments section. That's what they did. And that was heresy at the time, because every one of the savvy pundits on the Sunday shows and all the newspapers said, just ignore those people. Those people don't matter. They're the fringe. Don't even matter. There was only one other group who was doing this kind of work way back when, and that was liberal bloggers. In fact, 12 years ago, I wrote a whole long post entitled People of the Lie that was built out of toxic ravings taken straight out of the Breitbart comment section, as well as a bunch of other posts about various Breitbart stooges and their extensive support network, which we liberal bloggers never had. Now, the strategy of the Bannon Breitbart crew was to keep track of what the lunatics were freaking out about and then feed it back to them, a lot of it, put it on the front page, rinse and repeat, listen to the crazies and give them back what they thought. Listen to the crazies, give it back what they thought. This proved to be an extremely profitable and successful model. And Bannon parlayed that success into raw political influence, which eventually won Trump the White House. And he set up Bannon Embassy in Washington, D.C., and people like Tim Miller and political influencers and journalists and political wannabes all flocked to him because he had the ear of the base. The strategy that we liberal bloggers used was to shout our warnings about the trajectory of the GOP as loud as we could from our tiny platforms. This was not a profitable and successful strategy. In fact, it got us dismissed out of hands as crackpot alarmists, dismissed by the same people who told everyone, ignore the commenters at the Breitbart section. That's not really the party. You can see all those people on MSNBC every day. And in the comment section, or rather the op-ed columns of major American newspapers, now complaining that nobody could have seen this coming. Where the hell did it come from? And I just wanted to mention that clearly perceiving what the GOP base really was only being done by two groups of people. Mm-hmm. Smart political operatives who were fascist, bent on taking over the U.S. government, and liberal bloggers who were reporting that a bunch of fascists were trying to stir up the base to take over the U.S. government. One got rich. One got exiled as pariahs. End of story.
In the meantime, the people who said, oh, I don't know what Breitbart thinks. I don't know what Rush Limbaugh thinks.
Right.
From their perch on PBS NewsHour.
Yep. Every day.
Paid no professional price.
None. Well, they got promotions. And now they're all writing columns about how nobody could have seen this coming.
They're at the Aspen Ideas Festival this week.
Yes.
What are they talking about over there?
How to rebuild trust when trust has failed.
In an era of distrust.
Yeah. Now, one thing has remained consistent.
David Brooks, by the way. Yeah. Yes.
One thing has remained consistent. We are still pariahs. We're still crackpots. There's no room on a panel with Charlie Sykes and Tom Nichols and Matthew Dowd and Rick Wilson, who are all wrong about everything all the time. There's no room for a single liberal voice who wrote this shit back when it was happening in 2010, 2011, 2012. Mm-hmm. There's no room for us anywhere on that panel because we would bring receipts and that would make all of them very uncomfortable.
We're going to do a news roundup. I do want to say, I have mentioned this several times on Twitter this week, don't drink despair juice.
No.
It's tough times. This may be a long fight. It may be hard. It is still chop wood, carry water before Supreme Court bullshit. Chop wood, carry water, and after as well. While I'm editing this podcast for the past 2 weeks and today, I've been doing postcards to voters, addressing them while I'm listening to our audio. Get into a routine of doing one thing every day to make the world a better place, whether it's write to your senator or do a postcard to voter or call your congressman.
Yeah.
Something. To something self-care for the world. We are at our church making fleece blankets with crocheted edging for foster children in the community.
Yeah.
That is my escape from politics.
Well, and we had a visitor this week from the Doris Turner campaign.
Uh-huh.
And they apologized because they saw the no soliciting sign after they rang the bell. I said, no problem. I'm already on board. Yeah. Thank you for what you're doing. Beyond your, it was a bloody hot day. There were two people out there knocking doors for a local candidate for state Senate or state Congress. That's what you can do. And despair juice is salt water. The more you drink, the more bitterly thirsty you become. Mm-hmm. It does not slake your thirst. It will not satisfy you. And in addition to chop wood, carry water, my new phrase that pays came floating back to me from high school Spanish, which is the walker makes the path.
What does that mean?
It means the path is created by the people who walk the path. It isn't there. Yeah. It isn't a paved road. The shit that you want done, you got to stomp through the woods to do. And people will follow you or they won't. But if you want a path from A to B, it's the walker who walks the path, who makes the path.
You got it. You got to walk it. Yeah.
You do.
Got to stomp down those grasses and make it happen.
And the grass is going to grow up behind you. The people who do not like this country being a pluralistic, multiracial democracy do not sleep, do not rest, and they're full of energy and have lots of money behind them. The thing that made the Bannon Collective work so well is that they had a huge network of financial and professional support people who would prop them up every time they fell. They propped up Ben Dominic. They propped up David Frum. Anybody who sort of fell off the wagon for a minute, there was always a friend out there with a job for them, with a paycheck for them, with an award for them to keep them going. This is something that liberals don't have at our fingertips. And I wish we did.
And it was fascinating that the group that went after them for their advertisers for saying, are you really advertising this misogynistic, pro-rape, anti-black, white nationalist crap, and called out advertisers and really destroyed the Breitbart brand in terms of getting money from advertisers, because it was just considered generic to throw money at the web. You're just doing internet stuff. You weren't, you know, but your ad is next to a pro-rape article. You know, are you really going to do that? And, you know, Breitbart felt it.
They did. It works.
But that was a lot of work. That was
a lot of work. What we learned this week is that single-minded, passionate focus over the course of time can change the world. Sometimes it changes the world for the worse.
They've been at this for 40 years.
They have.
Doggedly fighting for what they wanted. And cheating.
Speaking of which, in a single term, the Trump Supreme Court has overturned Roe, promised to come for every other privacy right, gutted the EPA, told the New York they can't regulate guns, eliminated your Miranda rights, further bulldozed the separation of church and state, and hurt Native American.
And a woman was shot in the head on the Upper East Side of Manhattan this week. I heard. Pushing her three-month-old.
Yep.
And that got a lot of attention because cable news people live up there. That's not supposed to happen in their rich neighborhood.
Inside the perimeter? But,
you know, yeah. Yeah, inside the perimeter of very, very expensive condos. That's not supposed to happen. And, you know, thanks, Supreme Court, for just letting all New Yorkers have guns anytime they want. Susan Collins and Joe Manchin claimed that Justices Brett Kavanaugh and Neil Gorsuch misled them about their views on Roe v. Wade and the importance of Supreme Court precedent during their confirmation hearings. What are you fucking going to do about it, Joe Manchin?
Well, we know that Susan Collins is going to be very concerned about people chalking her sidewalk.
And she sold her house.
Oh, she did.
She put her house on the market because of the sidewalk chalk.
Moving to a chalk-free neighborhood.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that the Supreme Court quiet prayer case was clearly based on Neil Gorsuch's lying about the important elements of the case. A flat-out knowing lie by Gorsuch, joined by five others who also knew it was a lie. Beyond shameful. Making a mockery of the court, Gorsuch's opinion says that the coach was praying quietly by himself at midfield after the game was over. The dissent and contemporaneous evidence shows he was praying surrounded by a crowd of his players, some of whom felt obliged to be there. These are very different things.
And you and I said we both want to substitute teach for one day. We'll volunteer as tribute.
Sure. Absolutely.
To go into class and bring prayer mats and say, kids, get out your phones and tell me which way is Mecca.
Damn right. And that is not an insult to the noble religion of Islam.
No.
That is intended to show these people.
No, but get a test case for the ACLU. Right. That's
Absolutely.
What it's about.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Against hundreds of years of congressional action against solid SCOTUS precedent and hundreds of years of history, the Supreme Court held today that the states have jurisdictions over certain crimes in Indian country by judicial fiat, a devastating result for our democracy.
The same Supreme Court just severely restricted the EPA's ability to limit air pollution.
Ian Millhiser on Twitter reminds us that at this time last year, there was a big argument among Supreme Court reporters about whether the court is dominated by Republican ideologues or judges more eager to compromise. I think it is now obvious who was right.
Clarence Thomas's seditionist wife, Ginny, says through her lawyers that the committee she saw that she sees no reason to testify before the January 6th committee and won't testify due to, quote, serious bias concerns. Remember, she said she'd be happy to before all the decisions came down.
Right.
And now that shit's looking bad for her, suddenly she's had a change of heart because, you know, the Thomas family are just full of traitors.
But Clarence Thomas did the world a small favor by saying the quiet part out loud. In his concurring opinion overturning Roe v. Wade, he called on the Supreme Court to reexamine cases allowing both LGBTQ rights as well as the right to contraception. Thomas wrote that the court should reconsider its past rulings codifying rights to contraception access, same-sex relationships, same-sex marriage, calling them demonstrably erroneous decisions.
Thanks, Clarence. The headline of this story was, "It's not over." Indicted Colorado clerk Tina Peters cried fraud after losing the Republican primary by 15 points. She pushed a bogus conspiracy theory that, quote, the numbers are flipped and the results are fraudulent.
She belongs in a padded room.
Well, all the big kids are doing it. Why can't I do it? All the other kids are doing it.
Maybe she can raise $250 million on WinRed. The FBI seized the phone of the attorney who developed Trump's strategy, quote unquote, to stop Congress from certifying the 2020 presidential election results on January 6th. Federal agents stopped John Eastman and took his iPhone as he was leaving a restaurant last week, according to a lawsuit he filed in New Mexico to recover his property from the government. According to the filing, the seizure of Eastman's phone came on the same day that federal agents searched the home of Jeffrey Clark, a former Justice Department official who promised to help Trump reverse his election loss by pressuring the agency to promote his false claims of election fraud. If you think that Merrick Garland isn't doing anything, there's your proof that he is. Those things are happening because grand juries are looking at evidence. And Merrick Garland is quietly running at least two grand juries to issue indictments against these clowns.
Yeah, the FBI doesn't show up at your home and take you into custody on a lark.
Because
on
the Department of Justice doesn't know about, Merrick Garland had no idea FBI was going to take John Eastman's phone. Yeah. No, that's not how it works.
Now, remembering, going all the way back to Gingrich, all the way back to Spiro Agnew, always blame liberals. Yeah. Always, no matter what it is, it's the liberals' fault, is the default setting for all Republicans. The first reaction by Texas Governor Greg Abbott to hearing that 51 migrants had died in a tractor trailer outside of San Antonio was to blame Joe Biden.
New York Attorney General Letitia James, Democrat, announced charges against 10 companies that have sold tens of thousands of illegal ghost gun parts to New Yorkers.
The first reaction by House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy to hearing that 51 migrants had died in a tractor trailer outside of San Antonio was to blame Joe Biden.
A coalition of 22 state attorneys general reaffirmed their commitment to defending abortion rights and expanding access to reproductive care in their states. Guess which party?
Mm-hmm.
If you seek access to abortion and reproductive health care, we're committed to using the full force of the law to support you, the attorneys general wrote. We will continue to use all legal tools at our disposal to fight for your rights and stand up for our laws, they wrote.
And now in local news, we bring you Ken Griffin's No Good, Very Bad Day. Ken Griffin, as a lot of you know, is the billionaire owner of Citadel and a Republican mega donor who gave $1.5 million as the sole donor to the Illinois Values PAC that spent pretty much all of it opposing Representative Mary Miller in this week's primary versus Rodney Davis. Davis got stumped by the Trump-endorsed Miller. And except for wealthy politicians who bankroll their own campaign, Griffith's donation to Richard Irvin's race was the largest amount ever given by a single donor to a U.S. candidate at any level, according to a report from the Center for Media and Democracy.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Richard Irvin is an African-American gentleman who was running for the Republican nomination for governor and was perceived by many right-wing billionaires as the one who would be able to beat J.B. Pritzker.
Yes. And Griffin dumped $50+ million and just watched it burn.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
and the Democratic Governors Association did run ads in Illinois saying, Darren Bailey is too conservative for Illinois. Darren Bailey wants everyone to have a gun and loves babies. You don't want that. Like, oh, I love this Darren Bailey guy. I gotta vote for him.
Darren Bailey is a loyal Donald Trump supporter. Yep. He is too conservative for Illinois. And they ran those ads on Fox.
Yeah. And they went out and voted for him. And guess who won? Now that Griffin has pulled up stakes and moved to Florida, it's not clear whether he'll continue burning money on Illinois politics after he and his Citadel hedge fund have packed up and left for Miami. But this election was an unmitigated disaster for Griffin up and down the ballot.
Irwin didn't just lose to Darren Bailey. No. He came in third.
Came in third behind Jesse Big Mo Sullivan.
Oh, my God.
No one I know has ever heard of.
Yeah.
John Millhiser, the Griffin-supported candidate for Secretary of State, lost by 53 points. Steve Kim, the Griffin-supported candidate for Attorney General, also lost.
These are Republican primaries.
These are Republican primaries, right, in which the mega donor, multi-billionaire Ken Griffin poured a shit ton of money, and it was all for nothing. Nothing. So congratulations. Think of what that money could have done. I'm wondering if now that he's pulled up stakes and moved to, you know, near Mar-a-Lago to be with his very good friend, I wonder if we're going to start to see places like the Illinois Policy Institute fold up. Because once you're not in this state, you kind of lose interest in what's going on in this state.
If you can't have a $500,000 a year job writing press releases for the Republican Party, why bother? Yeah, that's interesting. In other local news, voters in Loami, am I saying that right?
Yes, Loami.
Voters in Loami, Illinois, approved an advisory referendum allowing chicken coops within village limits. The vote was 61-39%.
That is my favorite detail from this election, that chicken coops were on the ballot and people went to the polls.
And you know, those 39% of people who voted against chicken coops are doing a huge Stop the Steal movement.
They are.
Hey, each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Lug. Lug is named after the Celtic god of justice.
Woo!
And of course, Lug, who is a very photogenic kitty, eats freshly poured cat food, our fake sponsor. Whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store dreck, your cats will sit on the kitchen floor and demand justice, and also freshly poured cat food. Freshly poured, freshly poured. Oh, my Lord, it's freshly poured. And you can visit Lug. He's a beautiful kitty. At our Facebook page or website, and you can send your internet kitty, dog, or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write to us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Hashtag jail to joy. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our job. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, proleftpod.com, for details, our PayPal, postal address information, etc., etc. It's all there at proleftpod.com. I want to thank the listener who has already sent me a birthday card.
Yeah.
Good Lord. Mm-hmm. My birthday is not till July 16th, and someone said, don't open this until July 17th on the envelope. Mm-hmm. You guys are too much.
You guys.
Please share our show on social media, and if you love this podcast, please send us $5. That's a great way to let us know you love this particular episode, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties would be more than happy to testify before any committee for any reason, as long as freshly poured treats are provided.
Isn't that a bribe, Driftglass?
It's an amenity, Blue Gal.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Just think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, lovey-dovey.
Lovey-dovey-dovey.
Let's forget about
podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2022, DGBG Productions Incorporated.